Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thugging like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Boke, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. We off the cuff right now. You dig?
Bet.
What's up? It's your boy, Lil Yapa, UNLV, ragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You wait me?
Tiffany Levine.
And it's Queen Crazy, your girl's favorite bartender.
And we're from
Sex on the Rocks Podcast.
Alright, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip hop. Well, much love.
Alright.
Giving a shout out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey y'all, this is Stacey Lachey giving a shout out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real deal hip hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, what's shaking? Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh Design, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, uncut show on radio, the Guillotine Team, Off the Cuff. And yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clown heads.
Yo, this one fall on my MOBG and my out of state niggas rapping NYC. So my thumbs up in the clink, stuck in the bank. For my dogs on the corner that cook, they on wait. For young lords living like old time kings, and old timers putting young bloods on the things. Just a little something for your block to sing. Can you relate? Do you feel me? I think
mine like the Dutch. With a backwards, couldn't clear my style like I need to make a rapture. Fracture, cry now, laugh later. We consistent, compute data on your IBM. Dime bitches, I be eyeing them. Should be down 100 times. Still come up with new lines. Records X don't like me, come up with new rhymes. See you on the edge, give a push for all mankind.
Hey yo, this one's four on my MOBD and my out of state niggas rapping NYC. To my thumbs up in the clink, stuck in the bin. For my dogs on the corners that cook, they on wait. For young lords living like old time kings, and old timers putting young bloods on the things. Just a little something for your block to sing. Can you relate? Do you feel me? I think
Mike Tyson style. Animal thuns, we live wild. Too many ways to die, we alive for now. We cross borders, take the guns along with us. Defend infamous to the fullest. Protect my thuns that came with me. They move with me. It's risky for you to try to approach the guard shifty. We all gorgeous, the most fly, the illest. It's amazing what my bends do to your bitches. Why you bear witness? We handling your chick business. Thug it out, you know the dealings. Bitch, you dead in the wrong. Flip the two, not ready for a duo. Mom's already missing you, old fool. From the old school, you 36. I've been doing this since niggas selling nicks. Getting head from tricks, taking shorts for kicks. Niggas mad and telling where the stash was at. If she a dime, baby moms, don't be bagging that. Smack him with the yak, what react back.
Hey yo, this one four on my MOBD. And my out of state niggas rapping NYC. So my thumbs up in the clink, stuck in the bin. For my dogs on the corners that cook, they don't wait. For young lords living like old time kings. And old timers putting young bloods on the thing. Just a little something for your block to sing. Can you relate? Do you feel me? I think. Into my fifth world click, how you like this? Into my 30 South Thugs, how you like this? Into my West
West Side niggas, let's unite this. Until my side sound gangsters, keep thugging it.
We keep it gangster, my thugs ride for the love. Bravehearts, heads wrapped up in a scarf. Puss a Bentley, similar game to how a pimp be. Living the life, throw the dice, head crack me. Down to attack me, bat me. Hang their heads up where my plaques be. Faculty, QB to eternity. Ill will, this new millennium's what's concerning me. Thug niggas soon to see how we do this.
One for all my MOBD and my out of state niggas repping NYC. To my thuns up in the plank, stuck in the bin. For my dogs on the corner that cook, they on weight. For young lords living like old time kings. And old time was putting young bloods on the things. Just a little something for your block to sing. Can you relate? Do you feel me? I then. And for my Midwest.
Yeah. Mic check 1, 2, 1, 2. What it do, y'all? This your boy King Eric the Great. You're now tuning in to episode 353 of the livest, most important, hip and direct show, Off the Cuff Radio, y'all. I got my host T Max with the facts in the building with me.
What it do, King? It's a Sunday night, a super fantastic way to lead off the week. OTC up in the building. Shout out to our co-host and spirit, a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla, So Illa. You know, and I mean, King, you know, we got a special, special guest tonight. And what makes this guest so special is we've had rappers, we've had producers, we've had promoters, you know, we've had actors and actresses. We've had jewelers on the show. We have never, ever, up until tonight, had on a studio head who owns his own studio and heads up, you know, and is a master on the boards himself. This gentleman that we have, is to call him a legend is an understatement. This man from the 90s, even going back to the 80s to now, has cultivated some of the classic sounds, you know, especially with QB, with Mobb Deep, and so many countless others. He's a gentleman, he's a scholar, hip-hop historian, one of the all-around good guys. He's solar as hot as the sun. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only proprietor of Plain Truth Studios, here he is, Steve Sola. What's going on, man?
What's up? I feel like I'm going to enter the ring, the boxing ring. Wow. I love it. Thank you so much. It's an honor, and I really appreciate you, man, so much. Thank you so much for the great intro, man. I'm so glad to be here.
Definitely, yeah, Steve. We're so happy to have you on. Yeah, man. So, I mean, it's an honor. I mean, like I said, we've never had a head, you know, a man, you know, anybody who has up their own studio, man. So, I mean, you know, we've talked a lot with our guests over the years about, you know, their music and production. But, you know, you're the individual, the main source of where it all happens, you know, where the magic is made. And just, I mean, there's so much we got to get to. I mean, we're just going to go ahead and kick it off like a jump off. I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you came from and how you got started in this thing called hip-hop culture.
Okay, well, where I came from Rome, Italy, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, many years ago. I'm not from here, you know, but I mean, I've been on American soil for so long. I'm an American than I am, you know, overseas. But I came here when I was 12, and
in
really
Paisano.
Got into
yes.
Paisano. See, I speak fluent Italian, yeah. So if you want to brush up on your Italian, I'm the guy.
Definitely, classes. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, and you know, being a teenager, I got into playing guitar, and you know, got into. As a guitar player, you know, most people get into rock and roll, so that's how I got into it, rock and roll. And, you know, having my own bands and playing in the bands and stuff like that. But then when I wanted to switch it up because, I don't know if I'm going too long, but...
No, go ahead.
Because as you know, rock and roll and rappers and, you know, rock stars, everybody's, you know, whether doing drugs or doing... craziness and you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know. So right now it's the same thing, sex, drugs, and hip-hop, you know. So, you know, the bands, it was so hard. It's like being married to like four other people in the band, and just to get everybody together on the same page was so, so hard. And we did a lot of shows. I mean, I even played at the famous, when it reopened, the famous Studio 54 nightclub.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for a radio station, WLIR. And, you know, we were, you know, on the radio, in the clubs. The records were being played in the clubs, but we never broke it, like, to the mainstreams. We were pretty much on the ground. And I was like, mm-hmm. man, what's wrong with you guys? Like, well, come on, let's just, you know, let's concentrate. I mean, we could do this. But they, you know, they weren't as professional as I was, even though I was, you know, as a youngster, you know, you're definitely crazy yourself. I was still business minded and trying to, you know, to get the records out and getting played on the radio and clubs and so forth. So I said, you know what? I have to be in control of my own destiny instead of just like worrying about four other people. So I said, let me, you know, I was recording myself in my apartment and people were like, yo, that sounds really good. What, who, where'd you record that? I was like, I recorded myself. I was like, oh, you, can you record me? And this is like 30 years ago. So mm-hmm. I was like, wow. So maybe I have a knack for it. So I said, let me go to college so I could do it. I could be a recordist. But I wanted to know what's under the hood. I wanted to become a real engineer, not just a hands-on. And I was actually mm-hmm. doing it. I knew MIDI. I knew how to record. I knew, you know, analog tape, MIDI and all that kind of stuff. I, you know, was teaching myself. But then I said, oh, let me go to school. Went to school, got a degree, and then in 93-94, I started working as an intern at the world-renowned legendary studio Soundtrack Studios.
Oh, wow.
Right. And that was a blessing, because from Long Island to go into the city, you know, and it had a lot of studios. I mean, I interned at another studio on Long Island, but it was only one room. Being at mm-hmm. Soundtrack, there was nine rooms. So I said to myself, this is where I want to be, because the studio needs nine interns, nine assistants, and nine engineers. I'm like, oh my God, not just one, you know, let me be here. And then that's really how I got into, you know, hip hop. And between hip hop and rock and roll, I was actually also doing like dance music. I loved what Michael Jackson was doing with, you know, Eddie Van Halen and stuff like that, Beat It. So I was doing a lot of like dance music. Like some of the records were being played in clubs, like even though it had rock guitars, they were being played in clubs, and it was like dance clubs. So between rock and roll, I got into like dance, rock music, and then, you know, got into hip hop in the 90s. So not really in the 80s, but like early 90s. And I was like, yo, this shit, I can curse.
Yeah. It's off the
cuff. I was like, this shit is rebel. This shit is hard. It reminded me of when rock and roll was really cool and really rebel and really hard. And then it got a little bit soft, you know, a little bit like hair bands and, you know, the tight pants and stuff like that. And just, you know, all
the glam metal.
So, the glam metal, you know. I don't mind long hair. Yeah, I don't mind long hair, leather pants, but when you start with the hair, with the hairspray and makeup and all that, I was like, yo, you guys are too soft. So when I started hearing Nas and Mobb Deep, I was like, this is rock and roll. This is rock star stuff. This is hip hop. This is rebel music. This is me. This is the streets. This is what I feel, you know? So, you know, I put down kind of rock and roll and got into the hip-hop. And some of my friends at the studio were like, what, you like this hip-hop? I was like, yeah, this is my shit. He's like, how could you record? I was like, I love this shit. I love it. Like, it's not even a job. This is a passion, you know. So that's how I started, You know, and I mean, I'll say one more thing. The first big group that I actually recorded was Jodeci. It was not even, I'm known a lot for hip hop and R&B, but
right.
it was Jodeci, my first plaque. It was an R&B group, you know, I mean, the R&B.
That was 1992 with Forever My Lady, right?
Right. No, that was after. After that.
Okay, Diary of a Mad Band.
After that.
Oh,
the show they had
for
the hotel?
That was 96.
Yeah. I don't think it was 96. I think it was 94.
Yeah, that was when they. Okay, that was a Diary of a Mad Band in 94.
Really?
Well,
yes, it was. The Chrono.
Okay.
You in 1992.
Maybe I was recording in 94 and it came out in 95. I'm actually checking it right now.
Right.
Yeah, because I thought maybe it came out in...
It was 94.
It was 95, like I said, yeah.
95,
yeah.
Okay, 95, gotcha.
It came out in 95, yeah.
Yeah, and then of course, now you got it, now you said, now Steve, you said that, now we got to ask you this, because while that record was unbelievable, because Jodeci is, to me, somewhat still the unsung heroes of that 90s R&B, were you involved with that bomb-ass classic Streets R&B meets hip hop remix that they did with Raekwon and Ghostface the Freaking You?
No.
Oh man. But
no.
Yeah.
I came in at the end of the project. That's when me and Devante were putting it, like finishing touches and doing all of the interludes, and he wanted to make the album nonstop. If you listen to the album, there's no pauses. There's every song has an interlude, and we recorded all the interludes, and he wanted to be so smooth and, you know, nonstop, seamless.
Gotcha.
Right. And yeah, I mean, we were working like sometimes 24 hours a day and then take a break.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, take a break for 24 hours and then come back straight. No drugs, like coffee, like 20. He was a madman. To me, a genius. Devante,
yeah.
We had people like, you know, obviously Sista, Missy Elliott coming through, Timbaland you know, Player coming through, which I did records with. I did records with Player afterwards. I even played guitar on Player records later on. So there was like, I mean, you know, Devante taught a lot of people how to produce. You know, we know that, right?
Right.
Yeah, Timbaland and them too.
Yeah, Timbaland. I mean, Missy, Timbaland, Player. You know, whether it was, you know, not directly teaching them, but like the inspiration. I mean, he started playing guitar, and I was like, wow. I said, Devante is like, guitar is hard. A year later, he was playing good. That's what kind of a genius and, you know, talented man that he was and probably still is.
Now, I wanted to shoot this to you too, man. Now, with you being a sound engineer, do you have that specific ear for, you know, what will be a hit record? Like, do you know off the gate what's going to be a hit record?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I've been playing music for a long time, so it's kind of a, you know, I don't consider myself just an engineer. I'm like a producer, you know, executive producer kind of. With Prodigy, even I executive produced two records for Prodigy, HNIC 2 and HNIC 3. So I'm a player, musician, songwriter, engineer. You know, obviously I'm definitely more well known as an engineer, but that sensitivity definitely comes from all of that, you know, being in the clubs, dancing in the clubs, playing with bands. My timing is good, you know, as an engineer, that you don't really practice timing in school, you know, it's not what's required of you. But playing in the band, trust me, it's required. If your timing is not right, the bass player is not right, you fire the bass player, you get another bass player, because it's got to be tight. You know, so,
right.
You know, and so to answer the question is, I mean, nobody ever knows if it's going to be a hit, but sometimes, man, you feel it in your gut. I mean, you guys, too. You hear something, it's like, oh, my God. Like, this is the shit. Like, you feel it. And I did definitely, you know, felt some of the songs were going to be hits, and they were, you know.
You know, so, see, it's wild when you say that, because when you're looking at music in a different genres, and you said it's just an innate feel, it's a touch, it's an instinct, whether you're playing, taking it back to the rock part of it, the rock roots. I remember 1991, I was over at my aunt's house watching Headbangers Ball, and like one of the last videos they played that night was by this group out of Seattle that I had never heard of. And they were called Nirvana. And then I heard that opening guitar riff, down, 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 down. Then I heard that drum come in, and I was like, holy shit.
See?
I heard that. I was like, this group is going to be huge. You know, you know, the grunge movement in Seattle, you know, going back with Mother Love Bone, you know, fronted by Andrew Wood back in, like, the late 80s, going back to 1989, and even with Soundgarden's first album, Louder Than Love, the same year. Those were one of the first, and even with Alice in Chains and Facelift, released in 1990. You know, these were, you know, the albums, the bands that were, you know, that would be the nascent in its infancy. But Nirvana came in, and even Pearl Jam, you know, who released, I believe, 10, I want to say 10 came out maybe in the spring 91 or fall of 91. But, I mean, when Nirvana came through, I mean, they just kicked the door down on it.
They burned the doors down. My God. That's amazing that you knew, that you felt it, that you were like, and it was different. It was so different. I mean, inventing a new genre is like, unbelievable! How many bands can do that? How many people can do that? But
yeah, they killed the thrash metal scene, unfortunately, because I'm a devout thrash metal head. Slayer, Anthrax, Morbid Angel, Testament, Exodus, Pantera, Overkill,
wow.
Suicidal Tendencies, Megadeth, Vintage Metallica,
Forbidden.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they killed
wow.
it, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
The new wave, with the new wave of grunge at the time, it was more appealing to mainstream, and mainstream caught up on that at the time, too, because I remember seeing Kurt Cobain everywhere on MTV.
Yeah.
It's amazing how you guys are so right, how like, one group can kill it like that. And I do have a Nirvana story in a way. Cause,
go ahead.
One of the main guys that I was honored to have assisted as an assistant engineer is Andy Wallace. And now Andy Wallace and Butch Wig were part of the Nirvana records. And I read somewhere, not Andy didn't tell me, but I read somewhere that Kurt didn't want that polished sound. He just wanted to be a garage band. He didn't want to be that famous, and he was kind of mad at the engineer Andy Wallace and Butch to make them so polished and so popular and so amazing, you know. You know, they polished them up, which, I mean, I don't think they, I without them, that's why you need a good team. That's why, you know, pat myself on the back and all the other engineers. Shout out to all the other engineers and the producers, not the beat makers, but the producers, like the, you know, the Quincy Jones that actually are able to polish some of the music. You know, the vision, there's the artist, the vision, but then the music to make it better, to make it more mainstream. You mentioned mainstream.
Right.
And then, you know, later on, I was able to actually assist Andy Wallace in definitely a few great albums, Faith No More.
Yeah, in the Bay Area. Yeah. Mike Patton, Jim, Jim Martin, Mike Borden, all them. Epic.
Yeah.
Epic was the first album. Or was the second
album? You know,
yeah, but I remember.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did King for a Day. Yeah, and you know, he's a genius. I mean, Andy Wallace is, you know, if I have 25 gold and platinum, triple platinum records, he has 100 or 200. And Andy, yeah, I mean, if you look him up, Andy did, you know, Walk This Way with Aerosmith and Run DMC. He did Madonna. Yeah, he did all, like, he did all the hard, heavy metal bands, and then did Nirvana, and then started producing like Blind Melon and Faith No More. He was also produced a lot of records. So, you know, I was on it. I mean, this is the 90s where studios, even as an assistant engineer, you're working with like some of the best. So some of the old guys like me, we actually assisted some amazing, you know, engineers that have done some great things. You know, nowadays, okay, you can get lucky and just record and throw it out there, and you almost, it almost doesn't matter what it sounds like in, you know, a lot of this stuff. And you're just like, you throw it on the wall and see if it sticks, and then the record company gets behind you and sells it or whatever. But, you know, before it was like you had 90% were real engineers. Like, you had to go through the ranks, go to school, do it right. And first you intern, then you assist for like a year or two or 5 years, you know, whatever, and then engineer, you know. So you go through the ranks like that. But I was blessed. I'm going to shout out another engineer, Angela Paiva. She also, when I was assisting her, she was doing like, she did all the Naughty by Nature records, Color Me Bad records. She did a lot of great stuff. I mean, the remix with Naughty by Nature and Michael Jackson, you know, with KG and everything. Yeah, she did a lot of records. So there was a lot of engineers that I'm honored to have, you know, kind of assisted and been, not necessarily mentored, because we all did our own thing. But, you know, I learned a lot from them, and I shot them out, you know.
Yeah, you know, Steve, when you look at the science of music, and you have so many of these studios from all over, because, I mean, you have places like Electric Lady, you have Morris Sound Studio, shout out to Jim Morris down in Florida. I mean, of course, you know, D&D that was headed up by DJ Premier. I mean, it's like these are, you know, I mean, you have these studios, you know, and of course, with yours playing true, I mean, you all are synonymous with not only great music, but legendary productions. I mean, what is it like to be in that pantheon of greatness in terms of being like, you know, one of the places like people know when they come to you, they're going to get not only quality, but they're going to get classic canonation in terms of it's going to be like among like the legendary stuff?
That's a deep, deep question. I'm going to say, you know, because I've been doing it again full time since 94, so it's 26 years, but maybe halfway, my assistant engineer was like, man, do you know who you are? And I was like, who am I? He's like, you're Steve Sola. I was like, so? I was like, so what? He's like, what do you mean? So I was like, you know, I was humble, and I still try to be. I still have that feeling, like, oh, I still got a long way to go, and I still got to do, you know, I want 100 platinum plaques, not just 25. You know, 25 million sold. I want 50 million sold. But, so it's a deep question. And with social media, you know, it can get to your head in a way. But luckily, it never has, because the new songs that we're working on do not care whether I have 25 million sold or whether I'm called the Mix King. The new song, you know, whether it's an entity of its own, it's not the artist of me, doesn't care about the credits and the credentials. So you have to do as if it's the first song you ever done. Or like the Sex Pistols said, you have to play, you have to record as if it's your last record that you're ever going to do. It's your last day on earth, and you got to go hard, like as if you're never going to do it again. So
right,
you got to think like it's your first and last every song you do. So that's important, and you can't let, you know, the platinum plaques like hold you down, or even like, oh yeah, I did this. It doesn't matter. You have to do the next thing. And for many years at the studio, when I'm facing the speakers, there was no plaques in front of me. There was plaques all around the room, but beyond the speakers, it was flat. There was, you know, there was nothing there. But then I actually ran out of room, and I was like, well, I need to put some plaques. And I actually made a compilation of all the records and all the, you know, all the CDs and all the plaques, and I put that first, and then came, now there's plaques all over the walls, all four walls. But for the longest time, I didn't want nothing there. And people were like, how come there's no records there? So I was like, because that's a blank slate, and we got to do greatness, and the studio doesn't care, you know. So I hope I answered, you know, most of the questions. The other thing is, I tell the artist that it's fine. You know, that we're going to do, you're in good hands, and quality is important. And even if I work with them, it's the first record I work with them, I was like, now I'm part of the team. So
my
name is going to be on it. It's not like I'm not doing it for the money. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm just come in and just record. And no, my name is going to be on it. I'm part of the team, and let's do something, you know, great. Hopefully great. Let's try. I don't make demos. Let's try to make a record. And you know, when I was starting out, I was like, well, even when I was young, I was like, I don't care. I love music. Whether I do, you know, whether I make a dollar or a million, I'm just going to keep doing it because I love it. So I hope that I answered your question.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, one thing about it, too, is, you know, it's always about, you know, just learning the bells, the whistles, the knobs. And for our audience out there, you know, please break down the difference between, you know, just so they know, because we know, but we want our audience to know as well. Break down the difference between executive producer and producer, in terms of, because there is a difference.
Okay, and if you don't mind, I'm going to add beat maker too.
Sure, go ahead, beat maker as well.
Yeah.
please.
You know, because yeah, people say, oh, he produced that, and we never even seen the beat maker or the person that made the beat or the instrumental. Like, he never came to the studio, so the people that actually produced it is me, the engineer, and the artist. You know,
gotcha.
Obviously, these beat makers are, you know, exceptional. Like, shout out to Havoc and Kanye West, that, you know, and so that are in the music, and they produce also. So there's beat makers that also produces and do both.
Right.
Which is even better. You know, so the beat makers, the you know, to the listeners, is someone that just makes the beat, you know, does
like
the instrumental,
right?
Makes the beat. Huh?
Like the skeleton, right? Like gives the template?
Well, yeah, the template, yeah. And it's the music. They write the music. But then in the studio, yeah, we can move things around. We can mute certain things. We can drop certain things. We could copy and paste some of the, let's say, a horn or a lead line and put it where the hook is, or vice versa. Like, we actually edit it and move things around to the way, most of the times, the way the artist hears it. Because I like to follow the vision of the artist, you know. Even if I'm helping producing, I kind of, you know, I like to see, maybe they can come out, hey, it could be a new Kurt Cobain coming out, and, you know, you have that vision, let's follow that. So, and then the executive producer, most of the times, either pays for the project and just gets his name on there, or
right,
pays for the project and
oversees all the productions and what songs get on there, or does both, like a Diddy.
Suge Knight, Puffy, all of them who handle all the business logistics of it.
And also pick the music, what sounds good, what songs is good, you should sing on that beat, or you should rhyme on that beat, or no, redo the verse, or that other verse was better, or let's say Mom Deep Murder Music, we did like 45 songs, 50 songs, we did it all together, we have to pick 12, 15 songs out of 50 songs, and sometimes it's hard, it's like, that shit is hard, no, that's better, you fight over which songs should make the album. That's really an executive producer decision.
Right.
What songs to put on there, what artists to put on there, what features, even what beat makers or what producers, we should kind of like look into or hire. We were looking into Scott Storch back in 2002.
Oh, wow.
When he really wasn't known. Like, if you look at Infamy, the Infamy album.
Yeah, because he started with the Roots. He started with the Roots back in the day. A lot of people don't know that.
Exactly. And then Dre blew him up. But even after Dre blew him up, people didn't really know his name. Like, industry people, we knew. But he wasn't like a household name. And he did.
Right.
He did two records. Actually, he did 8 beats in a few days. And we picked two, which are on the Infamy album. One is with Ron Isley. Amazing, amazing song with Ron Isley and Mobb Deep and Scott Storch produced. So
yeah,
Yeah,
and it's crazy because I want to say that Scott actually did. He did that piece. PRE, Scott Storch did that. Yeah. Now, Steve, it's funny you mention murder music because I know this is a sensitive subject, and only because murder music was like Mob had already like really kicked the door down with the Infamous. Of course, Hell on Earth was another banger, but Murder Music was supposed to be the album that was like, really, really going to go take them to that nuclear level. But we all know the story of what happened with the bootlegging incident. Because songs like Thrill Me and all of that, which I heard, I was like, oh my God. And it was like, as a producer, as a studio overseer, how hard is it to try to keep a lot of that material in-house without it getting leaked out? Because we know the story behind that and how, Mob did well. I think they did at the onset of it, they did like 1.2 million on the first couple of weeks of it, but they were supposed to do like 4 or 5 million in terms of, what that record was supposed to really be. But the bootlegging has slowed it up. How did that all happen?
Supposedly, an A&R car got broken into. That's how supposedly it happened.
Gotcha.
People that might have followed him or whatever, whatever that was. But we were all like taken by obviously surprise and disappointed and all of that. At that time too, money wise, it cost Steve Rifkin a lot of money. Like, he supposedly gave Havoc and P $1 million each for the advance, and there was $1 million for the recording budget. And the recording budget for all the listeners is it pays for the studio, for the features, for the producers, for the engineers, for car service, food. The whole, making the album. So, when it got bootlegged, the album was about almost done. And Steve Rifkin came to the studio, was like, what the hell are we going to do? What's going on? Like, play me some songs, play me some new songs. And, he could have said, nah, let me just put it out there like that.
but we played him some new songs that we were working on. And he was like, okay, here's another 800,000. So he was like, yo, this is sounding amazing. So, that's just the recording budget. That's not a promotion budget. That's not, you know, video budget. You know, and, you know, for the listeners, it sounds like a lot of money, but you have to understand that back then, studio was like $3,000 a day. It wasn't like $1,000 a day. It was everything cost three or four times as much. Tapes, you know, even the tapes cost $200, and you can get three songs on there. Now, you know, on a hard drive, you can fit thousands of songs, but... You know, back then you had to buy the tapes, you had to align the machines, and it took a long time even to set up, like, just to set up a session. It took 2 hours to set up a session with the analog tape.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, you have to align the tapes, you have to get all the equipment in there. You know, everything has to be right. Everything has to be aligned. The board, don't forget the board. You know, you have 60, 120 channels on a board, all the tracks have to align to the board. It's not like now, it's in the box. You know, a little different. I mean, if you listen to Murder Music, it was fully done analog. It's got a fatter, warm sound. It's like a girl with a nice, fat booty rather than, you know, a slim, thin, you know, even though she could be beautiful, but it's just different. It sounds a little bit better to my ears. I think our ears, I think, are analog. I love digital. I love the editing capabilities. I mean, me and Devante were doing, again, in 94, we were doing digital stuff. So I always, you know, embraced digital. I always loved digital because of the, you know, what you could do. The flexibility and editing and stuff like that, but analog is also has a place that's the sound of it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know Easki. Shout out to Big Easki representative. Easki is like really big on analog. Like he's like one of the modern advocates for it. You know, and when you listen to a lot of the albums, those old albums back in the day, Steve, you know, when you listen to Illmatic, when you listen to, you know, The Infamous, when you listen to Smooth the Hustler, you know, Once Upon a Time in America, shout out to DR, period.
DR, period.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, DR, period. Yeah, when you listen to, you know, Hard to Earn, I mean, those albums just have, to me, I guess analog for what it is. It just has that vintage rough NYC sound that encompasses the gritty, the grimy, the hustle, and the heart of the Big Apple, and every essence of the sonics of it. You know, it's just, you know, if I was to do an album, you know, I think I'd want to go analog myself just for that vintage feel, because it brings that back nostalgia. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, and not to mention, just like you mentioned earlier, and this is what. Another question I want to pause on that. Like, when you first heard Nas and Mobb Deep, what songs in particular gave you, like, that rock star energy? Like, you know, it was going to appeal to also a mainstream audience.
That's a good question. I actually recorded Nas, my second great album, you know, it was written. And when I heard Street Dreams, I recorded Street Dreams with Nas, and when I heard that, I was like, wow, I hear this all over the radio every day. Like, it's just a hook, and Nas was phenomenal. I mean, it felt like it was going to be, you know, a big hit, which it was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and then the remix, you know, the remix was flipped, you know, I mean, when
Kelly.
You did it with R. Kelly, I mean, you know, it's like, what was it like at that time? I mean, because Steve, you know, me and King are old enough to where we remember videos being played.
Videos being played and the maxi singles. I know everybody remember the maxi singles.
Yeah, man, what was it like for that marketing back then in terms of when you all were pushing the song?
Well, back then was actually my entry. I was almost a baby in the industry in a way.
Right.
I was still just trying to like kick the doors down and like kill every engineer that was out there. Like, I just wanted to be better than everybody else. So me, I was like studying everything. I was photocopying every manual that I could get, whether it was the sampler, you know, the Akai samplers. So I was like drenched into really the engineer role, like being the best I could be and just really working hard and always at the studio. No life, no friends, no life, no weddings. I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't going out. I was the engineer. You know, we would sometimes stay at the studio for like 2-3 days, and then we're like, listen, I got to go take a shower, literally. So
yeah, that's that word.
At that time, like the mid-90s, I was really heavily into just being the laboratory studio engineer. So I wasn't really concentrating on, you know, the promotion. That came later, which, you know, I became more involved with, you know, executive producers and Violator and Chris Lighty and Jonathan Lighty, you know, talking, yeah, like, you know, next, like hanging out with them days on out, you know, flying to South Beach for 30 days at a time and, you know, just being entrenched in not only engineering, but also like the production of it and fixing it and actually, oh, what songs we're going to use and putting it out. You know, not that I was part of the record company, but I was so close to everybody that, you know, it just rubs off. You see, you know, how they do it and, you know, the conversations and how things are done in the music industry that are just, it's just like a second, you know, second nature. It was like, yeah, I didn't really want to learn, but it was like, it's there. So it's automatically, you learn it from just being there. And luckily I did because, you know, that's, you know, I got my own studio later on. You know, I've had my own studio for about 14 years now. So that's the business. If that's not music, that's the music
right.
business. Because, you know, you got to promote. I have my own small record label. So you have to do all that. Social media, you have to promote the studio. You have to kind of pay bills. You got to put out records. You know, I put out two records under my company. I mean, I put out mixtapes too, but and since we're talking about old school, I put out a single under my company, Plain Truth Entertainment, with Gwen McRae. Does
okay.
anybody remember? You know that name?
I'm trying to remember. Go ahead, King.
Yeah, Rocking Chair.
Rocking Chair, okay.
She did Rocking Chair. She's been sampled about 300 times by all the, even Mobb Deep did about 2 or 3 songs of Gwen McRae, LL Cool J. I mean, she's had 300 artists sample her stuff and put it out. She's a legend of rare groove and R&B. I mean, she's from the 70s.
Gwen McRae, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, Can You Feel It? Yeah. She did a lot
of
hits.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
She did a lot of hits. I mean, she sold about 4 million records. She has about 20 albums out.
Wow.
So, yeah, we did a song. Yeah, we put out a song. I did a lot of singles under my company, but then I also did two EPs, the Mix King EPs, which were fully recorded by me, mixed and produced. I produced all the music. I did all the beats. And, you know, I definitely got some major artists on there like Havoc, Mobb Deep, Prodigy, Scoop from Das FX, Hot Rod, which he was signed to G-Unit. He did that song. Yeah, he did that song with Mary J. Blige, Be Easy, which I also mixed his first single. And then he was like, oh, I like what you're doing. And then we got back together. He did a whole song for my album. And then I also put some, you know, Infamous Mob, I Am 3, Prodigy, Iman Thug, Mr. QB. I know I'm forgetting a lot of people, but, you know, I put a lot of people that are not, like, underground. They were not as famous as, like, Prodigy or Havoc or stuff like, or Scoob from Das FX, but I still wanted to put them on there because I felt like, you know, they were hot, like, you know, Far Monday and, you know, Chris Darrell. I mean, there's a lot of people that I put on there that are not known. Their names are not known, but I liked them, and I was like, oh, let me just put them on, the, you know, my album.
Man, you're taking
you
it back with Foul
man,
Monday, because, man, yeah.
I also had a reminder, too, bro, because we talked about this on the show a couple shows back, that it was an anniversary of the HNIC album a week ago, I believe. Like, if they get turned 20?
Yes. It wasn't a week ago. I think it was a little bit. It's time flies, man. I think it was about a month ago.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You might be right, though. You might be right. I'm going to my Instagram. Everybody, go to my Instagram, Steve Sola, on IG.
That's a little plug right there.
Yeah, Steve Sola. Yeah, it came out. Yeah, you're right. November 14th, 20 years ago.
Yes, sir. And
2 weeks.
Keep in mind, I actually have the hard copy of that album. And
no, beautiful.
I'm not no rapper at all, but when I heard Keep It Thorough, that made me want to rap. That made me literally thought I can rap. Because the way P was spitting those bars and the way he constructed it, I was like, man, I think I can do this. Knowing I'm not on that league, but at the same time, the way that whole album flowed, it's like it told Prodigy's story. It was kind of like an autobiography.
Wow, and it was. It was a whole, and it really was, because it was totally different than Murder Music. Murder Music, we had QB in the building every night. I mean, we had minimum 20 people in the studio every night for like a year and a half, every night. HNIC was different because it was just me and Pete. You know, he was concentrating, and then, you know, whether bars and hooks was coming in, whoever needed to be in came in, but it was more concentrated and it was more focused, you know. He had stopped doing a lot of, you know, smoking cigarettes and weed and drinking. He had stopped a lot of that stuff, and it was really, really focused on the music. And before I forget, the difference, a major difference is P would take the 2-inch ohms every night. He would not leave anything in the studio, and it was me and P that would have the actual files. He's like, Steve, don't leave nothing around. Don't give it to anybody. Don't give no A&R. He is nothing. Nobody hears anything. Nothing. Just me and you have, because he didn't want, you know, what happened to Murder Music to happen to HNIC. You know, bootlegging.
Right.
You know, yeah.
And I remember the reason I was saying that it was like a personal biography, because it was a lot of songs that Mobb Deep wouldn't do. It's like he went out of his range to do. Like the BG song, YBE, and the other song he had, Can't Feel My Pain, which was talking about a sickle cell. It was like a whole different range of songs that it seemed like he was venturing out from the normal Mobb Deep stuff.
Yeah, and musically too. Right? Like the beats.
Right.
Like the beats, yeah. The beats were definitely, I mean, it still had that grittiness, but it also had, like, some beats that you know, Mobb Deep wouldn't have done. You know, I mean,
right.
You know, if you listen to, Bink did an amazing beat, Rock That Shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you listen to that, man, the 808 rocks. It'll melt the walls down. Like, it's got so much bass, but it's also clear. It's an amazing instrumental. Like, even by itself, you can listen to that beat without any vocals, and it's amazing, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's wild, Steve, because I actually have that Double XL, not Double XL, the Source magazine from 2000 with P on the cover. And I know the HNIC album, you know, he was like, there was a lot of stuff with that because, you know, he had spoken at the time about he was still obviously upset about what had happened with Murder Music. Yeah, you're laughing because you know that story like I know.
Yeah.
And he was just talking, yeah, he was a little hot at Steve about that whole thing, man, you know, and it's like, I mean, yeah, but it was just wild, man. It was cool that y'all took the precautions for that.
Man, he had big balls, man. Shout out to P. Rest in
Yeah, but it's cool that y'all had all the precautions, man.
You know?
Yeah,
you
but
know? P.
Mm-hmm.
P was something else. To me, he was like East Coast Tupac. Like, he was just a little bit wild. You know, not as wild, but, like, he didn't care. Like, he told it the way it was, you know. But and he cared about the music. I mean, he cared about the people, the fans, the music. He loved the music. It wasn't about, like, trying to make, big money. It was about making great music, which I respect.
At around that time too, though, to switch gears for a minute, because I was doing some research as soon as I found out about you from T-Max. There was one record that you was heavily involved with, and this was one of the craziest records I ever heard, with Met the Man, Judgment Day. That sound there that you guys played, it was like something from a sci-fi movie or something.
That was Wu-Tang is another group. Oh my God. Yes, I have a little story with that. I was blessed that one of my friends, engineer, he did a lot of great things, you know. But he liked R&B better. He recorded a lot of people. And he was recording, you know, Wu-Tang. And he was like, Steve, I can't take them no more. I was like, they're too wild. Like, no way. I'm out. So calls me and says, go to the studio. So I'm like, what? You're giving up on Wu-Tang? And I'm like, what the hell? So I walk in, and the assistant had been setting up the levels. And it was like all of the Wu-Tang in there. Plus probably another 10 other people. It was like 20 people. The lights were low. The music was blasting. And it was like mayhem. It was like the nuttiest. It looked like Judgment Day in the studio, the video. It was like, oh, my God. And it was so loud. I was like, what the fuck am I getting into? Like, it was, and it didn't sound good because the assistant engineer was messing up all the levels and stuff. It just sounded like so bad. I was like, they were like, come on, let's record. I was like, hold on, let me just, you know, fix the levels a little bit, like, so it sounds like a song, you know, turn down the volume a little bit, and I'm trying to fix it, and then 15 minutes later, I was like, okay, let's go, and, you know, we started working. So from that day, you know, they requested me to do, you know, the Method Man album, and I did some songs with Ronnie Size from England, with Method Man and Redman. Also did some songs for Killer Bees. Yeah, I didn't do an extensive work because back then I was like, you know, knee deep in other stuff, like, you know, Mobb Deep, and, you know, I was doing QB Finest with Nas and recording all those guys. I was recording Prodigy. There was so much things going on. I couldn't do everything that I could possibly do. Like, unfortunately, you know, I had to say no a few times also to do other things, you know. So, you know, shout out to my man that, you know, was like, oh, I don't want to do Wu-Tang, but he was doing, like, some other, you know, Luther Vandross, you know what I mean? Like, recording some incredible R&B stuff. So I had to say no a couple of times to incredible, you know, artists, but because I was working so much, I had to do other things too. I had to choose what to do, you know?
Right.
Right. Now, Steve, when going back to when you decided to go ahead and open up your own studio, what was that like in terms of really getting all the business in order to finally get it done?
It happened 2 years before that. Business was starting, you know, with the digital era coming, business wasn't as good for studios, even like for Chung King. My good friend John King was like, "Oh, you wanna buy some of the studio?" And it was like, instead of $5 million, it was gonna be $1 million. I was like, "Oh my God!" Like, I could make like $3,000-$4,000 a day. But then I seen that the business, you know, wasn't as great, and that you could do a lot of it in the box. I was cautious, scared, and cautious. I was like, and I'm glad I didn't, because I would have made a lot of money in the first year, and then I would have went bankrupt. And unfortunately, that's what happened. He's not bankrupt, but he had to close down the legendary Chung King studio in the city, which he reopened again years later and then closed again. I mean, he had four huge studios, you know, worth like $4-5 million each, you know, private plane type of thing, you know. A lot of people record Run DMC, the Beastie Boys, Mobb Deep, Mary J. I mean, everybody, LL Cool J, everybody recorded at Chung King. So I'm glad I didn't do that. And I said, but I still want my own studio, because people are not renting out these big studios. So I need to have my own home base so I could create my own business and be in control, you know, of what, you know, instead of having a $1 million console. I said, let me be humble. I don't need a $1 million console. I can't afford it. And, you know, the banks would, you know, you have to get a loan, and then you would have to pay a lot of, you know, mortgage for the building. You know, my studio doesn't need to be as huge as one of these, you know, obviously legendary studios, which I love and I come from. But I'm glad I kind of saw kind of the future, the way things were heading. And I said, you know what? Let me be humble and let me be chill. Let me open a studio, even though I come from these big, gigantic consoles with 120, you know, channels and analog tape and everything. I was like, let me not use that. Let me use, you know, still analog gear for the vocals. Like, I still have a U87, which, you know, recorded a lot of people. I said, let me get that microphone, that $4,000 microphone. Let me get the $4,000 preamp, analog, you know, so it sounds the way it's always sounded. And then instead of going to analog and the console, let's go into the box, you know, the Pro Tools and the computer. So I still have gear that's analog, but the guts of it is definitely digital, and I was able to do it, and luckily I did that. And, you know, we've been successful, you know, for like 14 years. I've had many engineers that, you know, I've worked. Well, I have an engineer right now working in a studio right now as I'm talking to you guys. He's there recording for Plain Truth Entertainment right now.
gotta keep the game working, man. Even when you're doing interviews, it's about multitasking.
Right, exactly. I'm here talking to you guys, which I'm really honored. I'm so thankful. I appreciate you guys, you know, on a one-on-one, and also, you know, letting the people know and the fans, but also, you know, I would be talking to you guys without being on, you know, on the radio or social media or whatever. We would just be kicking it anyway.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Now, how did you come up with the name the Mix King? I had to know that. I had to ask you about that one.
Oh, my God. Well, let's keep it plain truth. I'm going to keep it the plain truth, okay? It's so funny that you asked that. You're a smart dude, because most people are like, oh, they call you that, but you asked, how did I come up with that? And you hit the nail right on the head, because it's exactly what happened. I came up with it. So
It was another engineer that was actually, you know, great engineer, and you know, I was trying to be better than him, and he was probably more famous than me, and so forth. And shout out to him, and he was like, oh, you know, these long hair engineers, most engineers are like, you know, they're like light skin, long hair like me. I was like, I don't know anybody like that. I'm rock and roll. Like, it doesn't matter to me what you are. But he was like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And so I was always, you know, because he had done a lot of great records, probably more than me. So I was like, oh, man, you know, I respected it, but I'm a little jealous and respected him. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm chairman of the boards. So I was like, man, fuck that. If he's chairman of the boards, I'm the mix king. I'm like, I'm the mix king. I was like, oh, I like how that sounds. And then someone else was like, yeah, I like how that sounds. I was like, you're the mix king. So it came as a, it wasn't even a thought. It was just like, you know how you do a punchline, as people are talking, you do a punchline, people laugh. It wasn't a joke. Yeah. It was just a punchline, and it sounded good, you know. And it just, I just ran with it. Just like, I didn't think of a punchline, but like, you know, my slogan is, you know, I'm not famous, but famous people know me. I was actually talking to someone on the email, and I'm like, I'm talking to him about me, and I wrote, oh, I'm not famous, but famous people know me. I was like, yo, that sounds good. And he was like, after I wrote it, he even mentioned, he was like, yo, that sounds cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I know you. And I was like, I'm going to use that. So it just kind of flowed, you know, it flowed and sounded good.
And it's also something that just makes you stand out from your peers, because everybody got to have that marker that make them a standout.
Right. And I grabbed the mixking.com web address too, you know, the domain name, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. So, and you know, I put out the Mixking EPs. It just worked out. And you know, there's a DJ called the Mixking too. Shout out to him. You know, I'm never going to say I'm the only one. I respect a lot of, you know, all the great engineers before me and the ones that are doing it right now. Like, it's respect to all of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, people are like, oh, I want to work with the best. I always say, I'm not the best. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, I try to be one of the best. That's what I tell everybody, because there's no best, you know. We're all doing it. And it's like, it's a matter of opinion. And I was like, I'm just trying to do the best that I can. I'm just trying to be one of the best, that's all.
Yes, it's also about everybody playing their part to establish their legacy and building a brick on this thing of the culture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So can I ask you guys of something? So since we're talking about the studio and the Mix King and Plain Truth Entertainment,
sure.
I was gonna ask if it was okay to get. I don't have many artists. I have one artist right now. I've had a few, but I try to keep it on. You know, because it's. I'm doing too many things. I have this new artist which I really love. Scotty Z. He's very serious. He loves music, and he's a perfectionist. And I just love, you know, I've known him for like 3 years. I've loved what he was doing before we started recording. I was like, oh my God, you're serious about your music. Maybe, you know, we can get him on for a few minutes if you don't mind.
Oh, no problem, man.
Yeah, please, please. Okay. All right, let me see. Let me add a call. Just 1 minute, okay?
All right.
Thank you, guys. Hold on.
Okay, I got them. Scotty, you on?
Yes, I'm in.
All right. Peace, man. Welcome
on
to the Tough Radio, man. Great to have you on.
What's
with
up, Witch?
What's going on? I love to be here. You got the Mix King in the house, T-Sola.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man.
Yeah.
What's going on with you, man?
Hey, chilling, man. You've been waiting for this. What's going on with you? How you been?
Hey, man, we laying
good,
low key, man.
Man.
Chopping it up
good,
with
man.
The Mix King, staying out the way.
Yeah, Steve was raving about your work ethic and your acumen in terms of being an artist, man. You know, he wanted to bring you on, and we're happy to have you here.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we've been on the line. We've been on the phone for like an hour already. Hopefully you'll get a chance to listen to the whole thing. You know, I'm sure you heard a lot of it, but there's a lot of stuff that we probably were working at the studio. We were working so hard that I didn't get a chance to tell you a lot of the stuff. But we're having fun. We've been, you know, history of hip hop or music, rock and roll, the Mix King, how my name, you know, you probably don't even know that story. That you know how I got my name, you know, the Mix King and stuff like that. So and then we were talking about the studio and Plain Truth Entertainment, so I'm like, hey, this call Scotty Z, you know, so here you are, man. Tell them what are you doing, your videos, what are we doing?
Hey, here I am right now. I'm in the works of basically putting out a mixtape right now. So the mixtape is called Scott Free. I named it Scott Free because, you know, I'm in a time in my life that I feel totally free, and I feel like, you know, all the music that I'm pushing out is like just like, you know, golden and what I feel is right. And, you know, through this whole corona situation, it helped me a lot because, you know, I stood steady basically by myself throughout the summer when everything hit really hard, and I was just banging out, you know, just waiting to, you know, put out this new music and let everybody, you know, listen to it. And so far I've been, you know, I've been doing my thing, and people have been giving me good news. I've been hitting them with good news, and I've been getting good news from them. So I got some music videos, I got a lot of pictures I've been taking the past couple months, and yeah, we're ready to go. The vibes is real.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, me as a music executive producer type, I mean, tell them Scotty Z, Instagram, YouTube, right? Your IG is what? Scotty Z, right?
Scotty Z, SKOTTYZ. Let y'all know something. I took the C off of Scotty and put a K for King, because we all kings out here. So yeah, so it's SKOTTYZ.
He's a young Ray.
Young Ray.
Ray in Spanish is king.
It's king.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody, just follow me on SKOTTYZ.
Sure.
I'm almost all the time on Instagram, putting out new content. So just you know, stick by. New music videos and new pictures will be coming out. Gotta stay consistent.
Already, y'all heard it. Y'all better jot it down, write it down, take a picture, as they say on Friday.
Take a picture. I tell you what, that'll make it last longer, brother.
Straight like that, man. So we hopefully when you get that thing up, then we can get a full interview from you somewhere down the line.
Get what down? Get what up?
Future interview down the line, like you can chop it up with the show and everything. Let people know where you come from.
Definitely.
We'll definitely line that up real soon.
Definitely.
Yeah, man, that sounds good. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So, Yeah, we gonna line that up, man. I'm gonna keep in touch with you too, bro. Do solo. We gonna have a lot of work coming in for 2021. We letting people know right now.
Let them know.
Yeah, 2021, Off the Cuff Radio, the Mix King. We all gonna be hitting y'all with a lot. Y'all, we coming through like a tidal wave out here.
Ha.
Tornado.
You better bring your boat, man, because you better bring a boat and a raffle, because if you don't want to get on, you're bound to drizzle out.
new wave.
Yo, Plain Truth also done, like, about 7 or 8 showcases. Like, Plain Truth, you know, we even did 2 shows at Webster Hall, New Yorican, a bunch of other clubs. And then also I was also doing a lot of judging for Coast to Coast mixtapes on video online, and also live showcases. I did for the last 3 years. I did a lot of judging for Coast to Coast. And Scotty, you did how many shows did you do with them?
Oh gosh, for the Coast to Coast, I think maybe like 5 already, 5 or 6.
Yeah,
is one of them one. Second place. They had my song spinning in the radio for like what, 5 months straight, 6 months straight.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, but
you gotta keep everything pushing while we can.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get all of that back. You know, maybe, you know, with the showcasing, maybe we could get all of that together. You know, I know you guys know a lot of artists and stuff like that. Maybe we can get, you know, whether it's Coast to Coast or, you know, our own, you know, Plain Truth Entertainment showcases, or, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever is clever, you know?
Facts.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, we going to have a lot of work on the horizon. And as we about to sign off this interview, man, is there any shout-outs that you want to give out to?
Wow. The first guy I'm thinking is Rob Parisi, because he's working at the studio right now as we multitask and we're talking to you. So definitely him, because he's keeping... You know, I pass on the baton. He's recording right now. New artist, you know, in the studio. Shout out to Creon, my longtime engineer. He hasn't engineered in a long time. When I was in China and Rick Ross came to the studio, he was recording Rick Ross. I never recorded Rick Ross, but he recorded Rick Ross, you know, and a bunch of other artists, you know, Prodigy and some other, you know, Nano, I think, a whole bunch of other artists. So, you know, these guys that are kind of like, I'm half mentoring them, you know, I'm kind of their boss too, but they're doing their own thing, and I really appreciate them, because we could just keep going while we're somewhere else, you know?
Definitely.
I mean, shout out to Mobb Deep, Havoc, Alchemist. He got nominated for a Grammy. Shout out to what he's doing. Awesome, amazing, talented, you know, person. Shout out all the artists, man, up and coming. Shout out to you guys, you know, Eric and what, Mitchell, what's your nickname? Was I have you down as Thomas? But what is,
I don't know if he's, I think he had to go. He had to go back in, but we call him T-Max.
T-Max, okay.
Yeah, we call him T-Max with the facts, because he bring a lot of the factuals. A lot of stuff that I didn't even know.
Right. So, you know, shout out to you, Eric. You know, T-Max, Scotty Z. I mean, all the artists. I'm so honored and blessed to have worked with so many amazing artists. And all the youngins, man, they're going hard. Everybody that's going hard and creating, you know, from their heart and trying to create something good, something great, you know, I shout them out, man. All the new guys, go hard, man. And obviously, you know, Off the Cuff Radio. I mean, I thank you guys so much for, you know, having me on here, and it's I feel always connected when I do interviews, and whether it's live or on paper or video, whatever, you know.
Steve, we cannot thank you enough. We are so humble. You know, keep contributing. You know, any acts you have, any people you want to bring on, you're welcome back anytime. You know, like you said, we'll be in touch with you on air and off air as well, man. So, I mean, we thank you again. You know, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you. Thank you, Eric, man. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Hey, thank you, Eric, for having me on the show.
No doubt, man.
Definitely, man.
Hey,
Steve, I'll be sending you more than pictures off of my magazine collection, too. I got more.
Same here, man. I'm
going to
definitely send you some stuff,
in.
Too.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to send you some stuff, too, because I got a lot of stuff in the vault as well.
Nice.
You can repost that on your page as well. A lot of Mob Deep-related stuff.
Oh, really? I love it. I love it. And especially the ones that I worked on. I'm definitely going to, you know, definitely going to post. There's a few more that I'm going to be posting, you know, which they're coming. I'm just backed up, but they're coming. I got like, I'm actually looking at my photos. I got like Busta Rhymes, Heavy D, Snoop Dogg, Lloyd Banks, Hot Boys, LL Cool J. These are all front covers, you know, 50 Cent. Man, we need to have another part two to this, because I worked for 50 Cent before and after, you know, before when he had $50,000 and then when he had $500 million. So I worked with him before and after. So it's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, that part two's coming.
Right, right. You know, more stories and more future, and, you know, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward to it.
Right. Cool, man. All right. So are we?
Oh, yeah. On that note, yeah, we about to sign up out of here. So we're going to definitely keep in touch. I'm going to look for that stuff this week.
Okay.
I'm about to dig to the vault.
Sound wonderful.
So on that note, we up out of here. Happy Sunday to y'all. Happy holidays, y'all. Y'all stay safe. And we out.
Yeah. All right. Out. Yeah.